Hey everyone, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the number one female-focused food podcast in the universe. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you from Brooklyn, New York. Today's show is a good one. I talked to my pal Vivian Howard, chef, restaurateur, author, and Emmy and Peabody Award-winning television host. Earlier this fall, I stopped by Handy and Hot, Vivian's brand new coffee shop in Charleston. For her delicious biscuits, hand pies, and obviously coffee, I pretty much ordered one of everything. Then right next door to Handy and Hot, Vivian is in the process of opening a brand new restaurant called Lenore, and I snuck in to see the work in progress. We'll hear more about both of those spots in just a minute. Vivian also has a brand new cookbook, The High-Spirited This Will Make It Taste Good. It's full of delicious recipes and stories from her life. The book centers around key flavor heroes, as Vivian refers to them, and she'll tell us more pretty soon. What else is going on? Well, a very Cherry Bomb Friendsgiving is underway. It's all about food, gratitude, and new traditions. My Thanksgiving is a little topsy-turvy this year, as yours might be, so I'm enjoying this virtual holiday filled with demos, panels, and talks. Head on over to cherrybomb.com to learn more and to RSVP. Thank you to our partners Maple Hill Creamery, San Pellegrino, and Kerrygold. Thanks to them, all of our Friendsgiving programming is free. Speaking of Kerrygold, they are longtime supporters of Radio Cherry Bomb, and they're supporting this episode. So if you see Kerrygold butter and cheese in your grocery store, show them some love. And let's hear a word from them.
Kerrygold is delicious, all-natural butter and cheese, made with milk from Irish grass-fed cows. Our farming families pass their craft and knowledge from generation to generation.
I'm fifth generation. It goes back over 250 years.
This traditional approach is the reason for the rich taste of Kerrygold. Enjoy delicious new sliced or shredded Kerrygold cheddar cheese. Available in mild or savoury flavours at a retailer near you. Find your nearest store at KerrygoldUSA.com.
Now, here's my conversation with Vivian Howard. So Vivian Howard, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
It has been a while.
It has. I can't even, maybe several years. I don't know.
I think it's been several years, yes. Fortunately, I've seen you in between the radio appearances. But yes, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. You have a brand new book that is so much fun. I'm very excited to talk to you about it. It's called This Will Make It Taste Good, and it is not your typical cookbook. Can you explain what it's all about?
Yeah, this book is all about, you know, the way that I cook at home, and it utilizes these things called like flavor heroes, essentially condiments or recipes that I make in advance and I use to make really simple food exciting.
I think you're selling yourself short by calling them condiments.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, but I have, you can imagine that I've given a lot of thought to what they should be called, and you know, I went back and forth with building blocks for a while, but I don't think building blocks are the big things in the recipes. And these are insertions of flavor, you know, so there's no easy name for them.
Well, you were very kind and sort of at the height of just the pandemic awfulness in New York City, you sent me two of them and they were absolute lifesavers because unlike a lot of people, I wasn't really doing creative cooking during all that. I was just doing like sustenance cooking, you know, because I wasn't going out a lot and wound up just working round the clock. So I very much appreciated. You sent me the tomatoes.
They're called red weapons, and they're basically like kind of spicy pickled tomatoes that are a bright acid punch and one of my favorite recipes ever.
They were so good, and you can use them in so many ways. It really is kind of mind-blowing when you start to think about it that way. And then you sent me Little Green Dress. Tell us what Little Green Dress is.
So Little Green Dress is like a chimichurri and a salsa verde kind of had a baby in a bed of olives. And it's called Little Green Dress because, you know, like a little black dress, it goes well with everything or is perfect for many occasions.
I think I mixed it into many scramble.
Yes, yes. Both the red weapons and the little green dress are great with eggs.
I think I wound up using the tomatoes in a lot of pasta
and the little green dress and a lot of eggs. And that kept me alive for about 2 weeks, Vivian. So thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So this will make it taste good. Not only is it not your typical cookbook, but it is really fun to read. I laughed out loud at least a dozen times, and I think I texted you half of those times, so I apologize for all the texts. What was it like putting it together? It seems like you had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it was the most joyful creative endeavor of my life so far, I think. Writing Deep Run Roots was very different because it was as much like a historical text documenting the foodways of this region as it was, you know, a creative journey. And this was really about, you know, the way that I cook at home, the way that I like to entertain people. I was able to, you know, just do what I want and like share my personality. And, you know, the goal was to just kind of delight people. And it was fun to do and felt just much more personal than Deep Run Roots.
Oh, this one felt more personal than Deep Run Roots.
Yeah, I mean, Deep Run Roots was, you know, I live in Eastern North Carolina. I grew up here, but I always wanted to leave. So in many ways, I identify with this place. And in a lot of ways, I really don't. You know, I celebrate the region for the shiny parts of it, I guess. But there's so much more to me and to my, even my style of cooking that Deep Run Roots did not represent. And I was trying to do that one thing really well, like write this comprehensive book about a place. And so this felt like it was my book.
Okay, got it. And you are a great writer. A lot of people don't necessarily know that because so many chefs just get ghostwriters or co-authors for their cookbooks, but you sweat through every sentence, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I do books, because I really enjoy it. I mean, it's the part of my work that I love the most. And I love crafting head notes. I know that most people probably hate that, but I will design a recipe around a head note if I've got a good one.
That is good to know. I love a head note. And, you know, there are a few cookbooks that don't have head notes at all. And I always feel slightly cheated when you come across a cookbook that has no head notes.
Yeah. I mean, as a chef, I don't really even read the recipes. I flip through and read all the head notes and find inspiration in them. So I would also feel cheated if I were flipping through a book with no head notes.
And for those folks who are like, what the heck is a head note? When you read a recipe, you've got the title and then the sort of paragraph or multiple paragraphs underneath that that explains either the chef's inspiration or some tips and tricks regarding the recipe. That's your head note. Some people don't take them seriously. Vivian does, which is why her cookbooks are great to actually read. So I took out Deep Run Roots before this because I, you know, wanted to do like a little compare and contrast with the cookbooks. I had forgotten how big Deep Run Roots is. It's like bigger than a lot of Bibles.
Yeah, it weighs 4.7 pounds. It's the same as my daughter when she was born.
And it's like 565 pages or something. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine how much work. Not only is it heavy and a lot of pages, but when you open the book, it's dense. It's not like you filled it with white space.
No, you know, well, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just writing. I didn't even have a word count on it. And I enjoyed writing it. You know, that's the part of my work that I love the most. And when I got the opportunity to write that book, I felt like I had done something wrong because I was actually like loving my work so much. And I felt guilty because it, you know, took me out of the restaurant and I didn't mind that.
I do remember how much of yourself you were pouring into that book.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, when you write, or at least for me, when I write a book, it's the thing that I'm showing up for at that time. You know, I think we can only do a few things well. And when I'm working on a cookbook, it's probably the only thing I do well.
Now, are you good about compartmentalizing and focusing on one thing? Because everybody's got a lot on their plate these days, but you've got kids, restaurants, TV shows, so many responsibilities, but you were able to kind of shut yourself away and focus?
Well, for this book, I really wanted to write it, but I really didn't have the time. So I started getting up at 5 every morning and writing for 2 hours before my kids got up. And I found that like I got so much more done that time of day. I mean, I've never been anyone that woke up 1 minute before she had to. And, you know, this was like very kind of therapeutic and quiet. And in that way, I was able to compartmentalize it. But, you know, it seems like particularly during COVID, my days are just eaten up with a lot of reactions. So early morning.
So now you're a morning person. Do I remember this correctly? But did I read that Theo, your young son, would get up and kind of hang out with you early in the morning when you were writing?
Yeah, he did. And it's the fondest memory I'll have of COVID.
The idea for This Will Make It Taste Good wasn't your original idea for your second book. You had a whole different idea in mind.
Yes, I actually had two ideas, but the very first was a book called Pleasantly Plump, which is the nickname that my grandmother used to call me when she really, I think, meant to call me fat. I wanted to write a cookbook about body image, and my editor, who I love, convinced me that a cookbook about body image, in his words, sounded like a pool party about drowning. So I put that on the back burner, but told him I would do it anyway at some point.
Do you still want to do that book?
I do, but I think that, you know, he had a really valid point in that perhaps I'm not the best person to write that book, but I definitely think that my experience and my voice could be a part of it. And so I think a book like that with a number of voices, both male and female, would be something that's a book I would be interested in reading.
It's not something you hear chefs talk about much.
No, you know, for all the things we do talk about, it's amazing that, you know, we work in the food space, but we never talk about body image and the way we see ourselves and our relationship with food. And I think it's just an uncomfortable kind of conversation, but it's certainly been at, you know, the forefront of my mind almost my whole life.
Not just the things you had to deal with growing up, but you've also been on now two different TV shows, and it's a whole other ballgame when you, I don't want to say put yourself out there, but you do, you put yourself out there and the public just feels that they can comment on anything. I remember when you and I got to know each other and I was at Yahoo Food and we would write something about you and people commented on everything. Like you cut your hair an inch and they would comment on your haircut. So you had to deal with that.
Yes. And, you know, that's something that when it first starts happening, it's really painful and hurts your feelings. But then, I mean, I at least kind of became numb to it because people also say really nice things. So those two kind of balance each other out. But for me, it was really more about seeing myself on TV. You know, I've always just looked in the mirror face on and I never looked at myself from behind. On TV, you know, there you are seeing yourself from every angle. And that was what was really hard for me and continues to be.
Do you think you ever will do this book?
I hope so. I hope so. You know, I think that if you want to write it and it feels important, I'll find a way to do it.
Good, good. You know what's so interesting about you, Vivian? Like, I don't know why, but I was thinking about your cookbooks in relation to like music and albums. And it's not like you're just churning out the same music over and over again. It's almost like you pick two wildly different genres of music. Deep Red Roots is almost like your double album of greatest hits. And I don't know, like a classical album or something. And then This Will Make It Taste Good is just a complete, it's like your fun pop album that you put out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good analogy. I mean, a lot of people have asked me, you know, like this is such a departure mm-hmm. from Deep Run Roots. And that seems really surprising to people. But, you know, I was so grateful to be able to write a second cookbook. And I knew that if it were just the same old thing as, you know, Deep Run Roots, that it wouldn't be exciting for me or for the people that are interested in my books, you know. And I write about this in the book that I've always had this resistance to being like typecast or stereotyped. And, you know, I really felt like as wonderful as A Chef's Life was, and, you know, it was such a gift to be a part of it. I had felt as if I had become a caricature of myself. because people liked what they saw. And so there were a lot of people around me trying to keep all of that the same. And I feel like it's really important to evolve. If you're in media, it's important as you're evolving as a human to evolve in media. And this felt like what I wanted to do right then. And it felt true to me. And I guess that's my pop album.
It's tough when you're a chef. I mean, I do think people like to keep you in boxes, not just in terms of your persona, but also the food that you make. You know, people like, it's one reason people like restaurants. They like the comfort of going back to the restaurants they love, and that the spaghetti and meatballs will taste exactly the same, or the chicken will taste exactly the same. And that's tough for a chef.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think a lot of chefs' like least favorite question is like, what's your signature dish? But everybody wants to know what it is, or like, what is it you love to cook? I mean, how do you answer that question? You know, I think anyone who becomes a chef or, you know, cooks for a living has to have a deep interest in a lot of different types of cooking, because otherwise it would be really freaking boring. I think that I'm with a lot of professional cooks in that, you know, we like to learn and evolve and try new things.
I would love for you to walk me through a recipe that you really love in This Will Make It Taste Good.
Well, you know, every chapter is about, you know, one of these things that I call a flavor hero. And, you know, one of the ones that I think, you know, will be most useful and fun for people, and one of the ones that I want people to make more than anything else, is the can-do kraut. And, you know, it's basic, like sauerkraut made with cabbage and cucumbers. But, you know, I've thought about this kraut all throughout this COVID experience, because we've all been looking for, you know, kitchen projects, things to do with our kids, things that, you know, we can make out of ingredients with long shelf lives. And, you know, I'm a big believer in cabbage's power in that way. The can-do kraut recipe is all about encouraging you to make kraut. Like, I make an argument for why we should all have kraut in our kitchens. You know, it's really good for us. It's full of probiotics. It's crunchy, it's bright, you know, it adds not only salinity and acid, but also texture. So it's really like a unicorn ingredient for me. And I love doing it, making it with my kids, because it's like a little science lesson. And there's a lot of like pounding of the cabbage, which is something they get a kick out of. And then, you know, it's something you can put on your counter and watch change and develop until it's ready. And I just think that that's a great lesson for all of us. You know, we can do things in our homes and our kitchens that we didn't necessarily think we could if we just try.
Okay, well, I'm going to make an embarrassing admission. I have never made sauerkraut. In fact, I love a fancy farmer's market sauerkraut, and I'm sneaking over to my fridge right now to give a shout out to these people. Gracie's Garden Golden Kraut. Every summer when I go to Maine, I always go to the farmer's market and buy their sauerkraut because it's amazing.
What's in it? What's the vegetable that they make it with?
It's just straight up cabbage.
Well, I actually think that is, you know, if you're going to use kraut in recipes, which is, you know, what I'm advocating for in this book, you know, I give you the kraut recipe and then like 10 recipes to make with kraut. I actually think that a straight cabbage kraut without a lot of extra like aromatics in it is the best type to use in cooking.
I would love to start to make my own, because A, you can do that in your house, like you point out. And B, it's also so good for you, which everyone now knows. And another thing, Vivian, I'm totally embarrassed to admit, I don't think I had like good or real sauerkraut well into adulthood, because I grew up on that sauerkraut that you get at like the hot dog stands.
Yes, me too. Me too.
Does that even count as sour? I mean, I guess it's a US thing, not just a New York thing, but does that even count as sauerkraut?
I think it counts, but you know, you can, when you know better, you do better, right?
That's true. So for someone who's never made sauerkraut, any tips?
Well, you don't have to go out and make this investment in a pickling crock, or you don't need to buy anything but a head of cabbage. I don't even get, you know, caught up in pickling salt versus regular salt. So don't let, you know, equipment be the thing that prevents you from trying to make kraut. There's a million ways to do it safely in your home, and I think you'll just be so pleased with yourself when you do something that, you know, you thought was otherwise, you know, outside your pay grade.
And what's the difference between pickling salt and regular salt, if you can let everybody know?
So pickling salt is a salt that's, you know, primarily meant for, you know, pickling and preserving. But the thing that it does that people, you know, celebrate it for is it prevents your brine, whatever the salt is going to create with the vegetable, it prevents that brine from being cloudy. So if you don't care that much about that, then, you know, any salt will do. I use kosher salt for just about everything.
All right, let's talk restaurants. We didn't even really follow up after my visit to Charleston. So I had to go down south to see a family member. And we just happened to be actually not that close to Charleston. But I was like, you know what? We're close enough to Charleston, so let's go. And you had just opened Handy and Hot, and I was so excited to go see it. Can you tell everybody what Handy and Hot is all about?
Yeah, so Handy and Hot is a biscuit and ham pie shop in downtown Charleston. And it was actually going to be a biscuit and ham pie shop in Kinston, where I live, until we just suffered too many closures related to hurricanes. And I was just like, I'm not going to do anything else right now. And so we started like a Handy and Hot online bake shop out of Kinston. So we just inverted the business model. And so we've been running that for about a year and a half now. And then I had this opportunity to do the actual brick and mortar version in Charleston. And so, yeah, it's been open for about 2 months, and it's been interesting opening a restaurant in the middle of COVID.
Yeah, I can imagine. So there's a lot more to it than biscuits and ham pies, though. Tell us what else is on the menu.
You know, I have a very particular point of view as it relates to biscuit sandwiches. Like, I don't think that eggs belong on a biscuit sandwich. I think that biscuits should have a little something salty and a little something sweet. So a lot of our biscuits have like country ham with apple preserves and white cheddar, or air-dried Eastern North Carolina sausage with grape mustard. And our ham pies are stuffed with like savory and sweet things. You know, we have an applejack, which is a really traditional southern ham pie, if you will. We have a lot of little salads and snacks. We have several recipes from this book, actually. A chicken salad that has a basil vinaigrette. We have a jammy egg that we serve in the morning with the red weapons, which is ends up being kind of a relish on that. It's primarily a coffee shop with really delicious food. So yeah, my friend Cynthia Wong has this great ice cream business in Charleston called Life Raft Treats, and she designed some special bars for Handy and Hot. And we have a banana pudding and sesame ice cream bar. We have a cola and peanut ice cream bar, which is a kind of classic combination in Eastern North Carolina, and a peach and buttermilk shortbread bar.
So I don't think I told you this, but I basically loaded up on everything that you had, because we had several days of driving, you know, on the way back, and we were just stopping, you know, at these hotels just to kind of spend the night. But I got, so I'm going to walk you through everything I got. I got the broccoli cheddar ham pie. The ham pies are insane. They're so good and so flaky.
Thank you.
I don't know how you do it, but that's why you're Vivian Howard. And there was a tomato jam one that was amazing. And then I got is it redneck caviar?
Yeah.
I got that. I actually went back and got another one. It was so good. I had the chicken that you talked about. I had biscuits. I had amazing coffee. I had had some really bad road coffee, so I was so grateful to have a decent cup of coffee. Whose coffee are you using?
We're using a roaster out of North Carolina called Black and White, and they're a team that left Counterculture and opened their own gig. And yeah, their coffee's amazing.
Oh, so good. Then you had some kind of like Powerball energy ball thing. Had to buy that. And then I got a whole bunch of Cynthia's things because I love Cynthia Wong so much. And I can't wait for the day when you can get Life Raft treats
everywhere.
Yes, across the country. I hope so. But I got the banana pudding, which was like a chocolate covered pop, you know, like a pop, like popsicle, I guess. And then life-changing, the peach buttermilk blondie.
I know, that's my favorite one too. I hate to say it because it's the least like specific to Eastern North Carolina, but it's delicious.
It was one of the best things I ever had. And I love blondies, but it was so good. And it's just the right size. It's like leaves you wanting more. But oh my God, it was so good. And Vivian, I just thought the place was amazing. Literally everything we had was great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I opened it, it's in a hotel, and you know, what we're doing there is just really specific and dialed in. And when you're in a hotel, I think there's this like need to kind of make everybody happy. And so that's been one of the things that we've, you know, just kept this constant gentle pressure, like, no, we're doing this. No, we're doing this. So that's been really interesting, but I'm really proud of Handy and Hot and how it's doing and how it turned out. So I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you.
Oh, good. I mean, I'll tell you, the first thing that went through my mind, I was like, oh my God, this food is like so much better than it has to be. Because sometimes, I don't know, that's a terrible thing to say because food can sometimes be an afterthought when it's a coffee shop, but absolutely not in this case.
Thank you. That's exactly the point. You know, when I was explaining to people what I was trying to do, I'm like, we're doing like a great coffee shop where the food is at the forefront. Mm-hmm. So awesome. I'm glad that translated.
And then don't fire anyone. But after that, I snuck into, well, I went twice. And when I went back the last time, I snuck in to see Lenore.
Oh, good, good. It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Oh my gosh. So this is a full service restaurant you'll be opening.
Yes, yes. So it's about 60 seats, you know, with a bar that has maybe 20 seats at it. And yeah, it's a full service restaurant named after the county that I grew up in here in North Carolina. And we're going to open, I think, at the beginning of December.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did I say Lenore right?
Yes, you did. I was on a podcast the other day and someone said Lenoir and I just let him go with it.
That's funny. It looked pretty finished to me. Why do you have to wait until December for the obvious reasons?
Yeah, well, I've just been pushing it off as long as possible. I mean, even to the point that we've opened Handy and Hot in the evenings just so we can, you know, so that I can kick the can down the road because I'm just nervous about opening that type of restaurant at this moment in time. Handy and Hot was one thing because it was always, you know, a grab and go scenario. Lenore is not. So,
yeah. Can you give us a little glimpse as to what the menu will be at Lenore?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the food that I'm really known for cooking is the food of the agricultural South, you know, really rooted in a lot of vegetables and grains and meat as a condiment. And so that's what we're going to be doing at Lenore. And the menu is going to be, you know, there'll be an appetizer section, but then there'll be proteins and then a bevy of sides. So it's kind of like steakhouse model, but with, you know, modern Southern food that's rooted in fruits and vegetables and grains. And I'm really excited for the format. Because, you know, as you get older, your interest and the way you eat, I think, changes. And, you know, for me right now, you know, I have 2 9-year-olds and they're a pleasure to go out to dinner with. And, you know, being able to go and order like, you know, a delicious piece of fish and then be able to share a number of sides that both my children will enjoy and I will enjoy. And we can kind of, you know, compromise and give and take in that category. That's like the way that I want to eat out now. And so I'm excited to have the menu shaped that way.
I love that you called it a bevy of sides. I would buy a cookbook called Bevy of Sides.
I would too. I would too.
I would go to a restaurant called a Bevy of Sides. So tell us, give us an example of what a few of these, of the bevy.
The bevy? Let me get the bevy out. Braised greens with a persimmon and pecan gremolata, We have a turnip root and green gratin, baked sea island red peas, boiler room French fries with kitchen sink mayonnaise. That's a start to the bevy right there.
The Lenoir bevy sounds amazing. Kidding, Lenoir. So everybody should hang tight for news on the opening. That could be in December, fingers crossed. And then I forgot to mention Handy and Hot. So you've got the Handy and Hot grab and go in Charleston, as mentioned, but you also have a Handy and Hot mail order that's still going on.
Yes.
So folks can go to Handy and Hot and order some of your products, like the ones that you talk about in the book.
Yes, yes. And we're getting ready to do like a specialty item for Thanksgiving and also Christmas. Ooh. And so the way we usually work that is like we'll release like 500 of something and sell them at one time. Mm-hmm. And that way it's kind of like a get ramped up to do it and then it's done.
It was very exciting. I'd be watching to see what those items are. Thanksgiving is coming up. You said you're hopeful, but what are you thankful for this year?
I'm so grateful that my family is healthy and around me. You know, my parents live across the road from me, and so, you know, I've watched so many people during this crisis be separated from their families, and it just keeps going on and on and on. And so I'm so grateful to have them in my backyard and for everyone to be healthy. And I'm grateful that, you know, I can see the silver lining in some of this, because I think that's one of the things that a lot of people are having a hard time with, you know, a loss of hope and a loss of a way forward. But I'm grateful that I have been able to do that.
Will you be celebrating at home this year?
Yes. The last few years we've been away for Thanksgiving. And so, you know, I think it'll be nice to be home and show my 9-year-olds a proper Thanksgiving.
How do you do your turkey, Viv?
So I brine it. I usually do 2 turkeys because I love the way a brined turkey tastes, but the skin never like does what I want it to when I brine it. So we usually fry a turkey and brine and butter roast a turkey.
Oh, yum. I think a deep fried turkey is the way to go, but it is not the easiest way to go.
No. And you should never do it like without really reading the directions. And, you know, putting a frozen turkey into a fryer is a real bad disaster waiting to happen.
I think there's a lot of that on YouTube. And back to a bevy of sides. Tell us what the bevy of Thanksgiving sides will be.
Well, my favorite part of Thanksgiving is dressing, or you may call it stuffing, but it's, you know, the whatever bread mixture mixed with whatever seasonings and baked. And so that's my favorite thing. And I usually like to just get creative with the things that are in my fridge there. I also like always candied yams, my grandmother's recipe. It's like really simple and just a great link to her. Always in my family, rice and gravy and cranberry sauce from the can. There's nothing that, I mean, I've certainly made my fair share of like whole cranberry sauce, but I grew up eating it from a can. And so Thanksgiving is so much about memory for me that, you know, nothing really suits except for that cranberry sauce from the can.
Yeah. My family loves the cranberry sauce in a can, and I make a little homemade cranberry sauce every year and they make fun of me.
Yeah.
And then what about dessert?
So my mom has always made pecan pie for dessert, and my sister then makes lemon and chocolate pies. And we always eat the lemon and chocolate pies for dessert, and then the next morning eat the pecan pie for breakfast.
Ooh, that's a fun tradition.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great with coffee. It's almost, you know, like a breakfast pastry if you think about it.
That is true. And I love a pecan pie. I'm sure Scarlett's is amazing.
It's the recipe on the back of the Cairo syrup bottle.
It is?
Yeah.
Now we know all her secrets. Well, Vivian, it's been so nice to talk to you. And thanks so much for putting out a really fun book. Like I said, I loved reading it and I laughed out loud several times. And I can't wait to get cooking from it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Carrie.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much to Vivian Howard. Viv, sorry we couldn't hang out in person, but I guess this is the next best thing. Snag a copy of Vivian's This Will Make It Taste Good from your favorite local bookstore.
And if you're in Charleston, head on over to Handy and Hot and try some of those hand pies. If you'd like to join Team Cherry Bomb for our free Friendsgiving celebrations going on right now, visit cherrybomb.com for the schedule, sign up, and more. Radio Cherry Bomb is edited by Kat Gorelli. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Hang in there, everybody, and thank you for listening. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hello, this is Rani Chima, culinary travel specialist over at Chima's Travel. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Sarah Prada, the newly elected Hayward, California school board member. Sarah is the definition of a strong Black mother, and she is the change the school board system needed. She's fought and continues to fight for the rights of Black students, students of color, and also the special needs students who have been ignored by a backwards school system. She is the bomb.